Good morning. I'd like to call on the House Committee on Transportation. It's May the 21st. We have quite a long agenda ahead of us this morning. We will try to get to each item. At the courtesy of some of the legislators, we'll be bouncing around a little bit, so please bear with us. And also, we won't go into work session on any item until we have all of our members here. Representative Lehman is excused and in Coos Bay today, but we have two other members who aren't here yet. So I think what we will do is, since we do have some people who have come from quite a distance, maybe if it's okay with the committee, we'll start a couple public hearings until we get the full body in. And the first bill up is Senate Bill 1006. Janet, would you explain that to us? And our friends from Deschutes County are here, so you can drive home before it snows in 84-degree weather. Thank you, Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1006, and you should have the A and gross version of the bill. It passed in the Senate on a vote of 29-1. Under current law, justice courts only have jurisdiction over traffic offenses that are committed in the county where the court is located. Law enforcement officials can cite a traffic infraction into the county's justice court, or if there's a closer circuit court, they can cite the ticket into the circuit court. They may not currently cite into another county's justice court. Senate Bill 1006A would allow them to do that, to cite into another county's justice court. There is a fiscal statement on the bill, and that's a result of the fact that 50% of traffic fines that are cited in circuit court go to the state general fund. Fines that are cited in a justice court go 100% to the county, so except for the unitary assessment portion. The fiscal statement indicates that there's an indeterminate loss to the state general fund as a result of the different place that a law enforcement official might cite the ticket. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there's a representative from the County Sheriff's Office in Deschutes to explain the circumstances around the bill. Thank you.
Yes, very good, Representative Sheriff. Thanks for being here. Nice to see you again.
Thank you, Chair Montgomery. For the record, my name is Greg Brown. I'm the Deschutes County Sheriff. Deschutes County is asking for this amendment in Oregon law to allow justice courts, when appropriate, to accept traffic infraction citations. It was very well explained. Presently, citations can be issued to the closest court of jurisdiction if it's a state court. We're asking to have that same ability in justice courts. In Deschutes County's case, as you know, we're the fastest growing county in the state. We're the 64th fastest growing region in the country. We have a lot of traffic congestion, a lot of traffic problems, and our citizens have to travel a lot of miles to get to the state court. We have two areas that we're specifically trying to address. We're going to form regional courts in Deschutes County in the Lapine area and in the Sisters area. Both of those areas cover several areas that are not only in Deschutes County, but could include like northern Klamath County or western, the portion of Jefferson County. The citizens in our community very strongly want regional courts. And if they receive a minor traffic infraction, rather than having to drive 40 to 50 miles to a state court, they would be able to go to a court in their own community. And again, this will only affect minor traffic offenses and only in those cases where the court would be closest. And so in the case of, say, Sisters, a Camp Sherman resident could appear in Sisters. It won't have a lot of impact, in my opinion, around the state, but it will allow us in law enforcement to better serve the citizens of our communities.
Thank you, Sheriff. Are there any questions? I see the Association of Oregon Counties did come in with you, and there's all 35 other counties are happy with it, too. There's no opposition.
None that I'm aware of. We had some questions early on from some of the justice courts that wanted to make sure that it was not going to impact their courts, and I think we've satisfied those concerns as we've explained what we're trying to do, and to my knowledge, there's no opposition from the justice courts at all across the state.
Thank you. Are there any questions? I just looked in the audience. I don't see the name down here, but I do see the Deschutes County Commissioner out there. I'll bet she's here for another reason.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you. If there are no questions, thank you very much, Sheriff, for coming.
Thank you, Sir Montgomery, members.
We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1006. We will open the work session on Senate Bill 1006. Pleasure of the committee, Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 1006A engrossed to the floor with a due class recommendation.
thank you. Representative Hill moves Senate Bill 1006 to the floor with the due pass. Is there any discussion of the committee? Representative Hill.
I just to make sure that, you know, we're not going to have speed traps in Deschutes County now as we go through there, that, you know, they're set up for generating revenue.
We have a justice court in Cascade Lock, so I won't
forget
that. Thank you. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Dillon.
Aye.
Representative Crummell.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Wells.
Yes.
Representative Montgomery.
Aye. We passed Senate Bill 1006A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Do I have someone, Representative Wells, to carry the bill? We have Senator Dukes with us right now. Senator, we will go to your bill next. That is Senate Bill 1108. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1108A. Do you have a sign-up sheet on that, Brad? Good morning, sure. Senator. Janet, would you give us... I have to find my key. As soon as we find them.
Thank you. Members, Senate Bill 1108, A. Engross, would acknowledge the importance of farms to market roads and require state and local authorities to consider such importance when making highway funding decisions. Mr. Chair, it's a non-fiscal bill, and so the bill on the Senate staff and
the
summary are at your place.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Senator. Thanks
Good morning.
For joining us.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Joan Duke, State Senator for District 1, and it's nice to have my bills on the House side now. I get to see my state representative once in a while. Good morning, Jackie. Senate Bill 1108 is really a little bill, a pretty simple little bill, but it means a lot to some people who have been struggling to get their pleas heard for a number of years. We used to have farm-to-market roads in the statutes, and somewhere along the line they disappeared as a statutory entity. This puts them back in. It doesn't require anything more than that state and local governments consider farm-to-market roads when they're deciding where they're going to put their money. There's a study out that shows that millions of dollars are lost as a result of mostly dust from gravel roads that are used. They're next to agricultural lands, and they're used more and more heavily than they used to be. I mean, we get to deal with the struggle of moving people out into agricultural communities, and most of them are driving, and they're driving down these roads, and the resulting loss of crops was a real surprise to me. They tell me, and I've observed it, that it's difficult when they go to their local jurisdictions, particularly, although sometimes to the state, and say, we need money, we need to have this road paved, because it's not an urban road, and they usually fall off the priority list. This gives them the opportunity to at least go in and be heard, and have the opportunity to make their case. Local governments will still spend the money where they decide to spend the money. No requirements that they put it on the farm-to-market roads. But I think it's important, especially as we've been running into lately load limits and slides that close roads, and we've been using more of these smaller arterials, and I've been impressed with the damage that has done very quickly to these roads because they haven't been kept up. And when the main road is detoured, here we are on these things, and we've not been able to get, in some cases, or it's been very difficult getting crops out and to market because some of these roads have not been kept up.
Thank you, Senator. President Hill?
Chair. Senator, another issue in terms of which comes out to our county, Western Washington County.
You guess where this bill came from.
In Western Washington County, we've got this slice of urbanness which reaches out into Western Washington County. I remember when I was growing up out there, we had Bird's Eye, we had all these food processing plants, and they're now all gone.
Mm-hmm.
The last one has stopped accepting raw products, and they're just doing repackaging now. And so we have the Urban Growth Boundary, and we have all this wonderful farmland out in the Fulton Valley. but it is locked because it doesn't have a transportation system that is adequate to allow the transportation of these goods down to the Willamette Valley now where the food processing operations have moved. In terms of, is this a strategy which will help in that instance in terms of, which I shudder to say the terms, the West Side Bypass, or as I like to talk about, a transportation corridor that will support the transportation of goods from the farm to market. Will this raise the importance of the issue of creating a transportation system that supports the delivery of these goods and services to market, or is this more focused to the more localized farm-type roads with the dust situation you talked about?
Representative Hill, I believe this could be helpful. The way those decisions, well, actually in the metropolitan area, they're made at JPAC, but there's also some decision-making made at the county level, and that's usually done through the budget process. This bill would require that those commissioners consider the farm-to-market roads or the problem that exists there, and I think that if people came up with some alternatives that were necessary in order to get crops to market, that this gives them the ability to go in and say, you have to listen to us and get the hearing, which at this point in time they're not getting a lot of.
Well, that's
up to you. Yeah.
In subsection 2, section 1, on line 11, use the word primarily. Is that going to defeat the purpose? Because, you know, I can go out and I can argue the other side of the equation. Well, you know, gosh, we've done that, we've done a road count, and, you know, this road is not primarily used for the transportation of goods to market, but, you know, it's all these nice urban people trying to get somewhere, and they're out using these roads to because they don't want to get on the Sunset and go down 217 to head down south. Is there a better term to use there that focuses on what we're talking about is, hey, when you're looking at making spending decisions, don't forget the fact that we have a land use system in this state which is designed to protect farms, and that we need to bring our transportation decision-making in line with that, that we need a transportation system that supports that same principle. Otherwise, we've defeated the entire purpose of Oregon's land use system.
Chair, Representative Hill, there may be a better word. What we were trying to get at in this subsection was to make sure one of the committee members in the Senate was concerned, and I think it was Texas, where he said that their farm-to-market roads are basically interstates, and they're within other interstates, and he didn't want to see the money spent on I-5, for example, and that sort of thing. So this subsection is trying to make sure that we avoid that and get it on the more local roads and highways. So there may be a better word. Your point is well taken.
Senator, this committee has no problem with 72-page bills. It's one-page bills to get it
so, I understand.
I think thicker bills would be a lot better on that. Any other questions, Representative Wells?
Thank you. I have sympathy for what you're trying to do here, but I don't know whether you've convinced me that this is really going to do anything. Can you help me out a little bit more?
Certainly, I'll try. My attempt here is to get them a seat at the table. I was not going to try to say to state and local government, you must spend some of your transportation dollars in this way. But the complaint I have heard for years, and it is particularly coming in my district from one county, although it's now into two counties, is they don't want to listen to us. They're going to put the money into the urban areas, and that's what they tell us, into the city streets, and we get left out. And I believe they can make a very valuable case that they can get to the table, and that's what I'm trying to do with this show.
Representative Hill, you're still up. We have one more person to testify on this bill, too, for Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just sitting here jotting some words down here. If you change the primarily to move to something like that is used to facilitate the movement of agricultural logging products to market, which takes away in terms of the use of the road to the end and puts the emphasis on creating a transportation system that moves products to market versus what the use of the road is primarily for. To me, it's something that I know where bureaucrats will come in and fight over the word what's primarily used for, and then we'll and you'll have this big argument on the other side, and you take it away from them, they can say that the whole purpose is to figure out how we move products to market.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I wouldn't have any trouble with that language.
Thank you, Representative Loken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree. I think that might help your bill because I think there are safety factors too, and we've been considering those in terms of farm to market in the area of Christmas trees. We had a lot of discussion about that.
Mm-hmm.
So that might even broaden the reason for your being at the table or the folks that want to have farm to market roads in better shape.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming over. You're welcome to come up and join us since you don't have a committee to serve on.
I have another committee. I'll wait in the audience until you're finished. Thank you.
John Miller also is here on Senate Bill 1108.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, Sean Miller, I represent the Oregon Christmas Tree Growers. Senator Dukes' constituent is one of the growers that has talked about this extensive crop damage, for which roads that have been reverted into gravel roads actually take away about 10 rows from the dust factor that have normally been used to be transported to the market. As quickly, we support 1108, and I'd like to just make a few comments based on the some of the comments up to address Representative Hill's remarks on primarily. I think another way to do it is to actually just take primarily out of that particular line. That might be another suggestion that we would support. I don't think it's really needed in that line, and we would support that if the committee felt that was necessary. As for Representative Wells' remarks on why this bill is needed, I think and one of the suggestions we talked about in the Senate would be to not just get the farmers to the table when considering funding of farm-to-market roads, but I think if we were to, in the Ways and Means Committee, put a budget note on the Department of Transportation to track when money is being considered for farm-to-market roads, and we had data built up over time, I think it would be more effective for the legislature to see how much money is being considered for these roads and how much money is being cut out. Right now, we don't have that kind of data. I think that was a good suggestion that the Senate committee offered that might then lead to a little more validity of why this bill is needed. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Hill?
I don't have a question for Sean. I was just perhaps I'd be interested if we could get Grace's take on this issue in terms of how the department is approaching these issues. I know I've personally talked to Grace about this in the past, about how we do initially step down, but I think it would be useful to understand in terms of where they're at today on these issues.
I from Tony can hear earlier if you I'm surprised that the counties aren't here checking on this, but this is a mandate on the counties, and I heard the word dust, and that's kind of scary because that makes more money and more cost to the local governments having to take the dust off the road, and that's very expensive. But they aren't here, so they must. Thank you, Mr. Miller, for being with us. We'll see if
you had a question.
That really it seems like this is a county issue. Most of these roads seem like they're county roads rather than state departments. It would seem to me that this is a decision needs to be made by the county commissioners and the people who run the county road department, more than anything else. Isn't that not true?
Mr. Chair, President Wells, that is correct. This isn't a mandate, however. This is just that they should acknowledge what a farm-to-market road is and that they need to consider where that money should go. And so I think it's just more or less putting farm-to-market roads back in the statute so when counties, local governments do consider where the money is going to go, that is a consideration. Right now, the farmers feel that it's not a consideration. I think this just gets into the
thing. Point's well taken. It's kind of something we don't really need to do, but it's a warm, fuzzy feeling, so we might as well keep moving with it. Did we have somebody want to talk to Representative Grace Cunningham about some questions? Grace, would you mind taking a moment with us? Is thank you. I don't know if you've heard the subject or the question. Representative Hill had a couple of questions about wasn't you that was...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Grace, I'm just curious in terms of the thing I'll talk to you about the West Side Bypass or a transportation corridor that facilitates the movement of products to market in Western Washington County. And I'm just curious in terms of how you would see implementing this in your decision-making processes in Western Washington County or statewide, and how you deal with this issue from a transportation policy standpoint.
For the record, my name is Grace Kernikin, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, I would not have made the direct connection between the Western Bypass and this road. So if that's the connection that's being made, my comments will shift a little bit from what they were going to be originally. To my original comments, I would say the way I read this is they're trying to get the attention of the Department, Oregon Transportation Commission, and counties not to forget, as we move forward looking at traffic counts, that we're an agricultural-based state and that we have agricultural concerns that we need to take into account. And this raises, I heard some discussion about Christmas trees and other things, and I know we've run into some difficulties there, and I think it's a very constructive way to bring it to our attention and ask us to consider it, and I think we can do that. If there's a connection here that asks us to reconsider the Western Bypass because of this bill, I would have some concerns about that. I wasn't the director at the time or involved in the process directly, but I understand that was quite a contentious issue, and I don't see the direct connection here, so I guess I would alert you that I don't see this bill as providing any impetus to the revitalization of that project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, personally, I argue in terms of that West Washington County needs a transportation corridor that runs north-south so that the farms that are outside of the urban growth boundary have a transportation corridor that they can take their products to market. It is becoming unfeasible for them to come down the Sunset and then go down 217 I-5 to head south. And the three-digit state highways that run that direction from a safety standpoint are probably not the best. We have increased traffic in terms of the urban areas there. And so where I'm not suggesting that the department go out and revive an 8-lane freeway. And so I'm arguing a transportation corridor. And I guess in this, if you don't see how a farm-to-market issue exists in Western Washington County, I guess that concerns me in terms of the traffic patterns that are necessary to support the agricultural industry, which is out in Western Washington County. And that's what I'm just sort of trying to understand in terms of how you would take that and look at it. I know everybody always thinks urban, but I have EFU land in my district around the outskirts there, and they rely on their ability to take strawberries and get them to market. And we no longer have any processing facilities. The last one closed down 2 years ago, and now they're required to take their products down to the Willamette Valley. And that's my issue in terms of, and that's why I think this is a very good issue, and I'm just curious how you, in making transportation policy decisions, would implement this concept in making decisions in terms of how you're going to prioritize projects.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, I made the distinction with the Western Bypass because I saw the Western Bypass a little differently than you described it, more related to auto travel. So the latest comments that you just made to me reinforced what I said in my opening comments, is that we had a hard time last session. Freight was an issue, okay? And your concerns are somewhat related to freight, although freight very frequently is trying to go to a more urban area as opposed to sort of going, if you will, in your example, from Washington County down the valley to McMinnville, maybe to the Salem plant. So I think that this is a very constructive way to draw it to our attention. and parallels the commission's concern for freight. And I mean, some things that could happen as a result of this. We have a freight advisory committee talking to them about or taking a look with our research unit at what the agricultural needs are in the state, doing some kind of survey and then providing that to the commission so that they can take that into account when they consider the SIP. These parallels the work we're doing on the freight side right now. We'd like any other Department of Transportation. I think more recently people have been responding to urban congestion. So I think this constructively says it. So what I will be doing as a director is taking a look at this and talking with my transportation development unit, which is looking at problems that are coming in the future and looking at changes in patterns that are out there. And we take a special look to specifically survey the agricultural needs of the state and where products are trying to get from and to in the processing process.
Just one thing. If we discuss this much more, we'll have a whole growing season past this.
Just one last question. On your freight advisory team, do you have agricultural representatives there on that, or is it just more traditional freight?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, we have the forest products industry represented, and this is a good cue to involve a broader agricultural representation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Grace, for coming in. Mr. Finnegan. Is there any other person who would like to testify on Senate Bill 1108? Seeing none and hearing none, we'll close the public hearing and open the work session on Senate Bill 1108. Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, I would move to suspend the rules for the purpose of striking the words primarily out of line 11 out of the bill.
Representative Hill moves to suspend the rules. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, I move to strike the words primarily from line 11 in the A and Gross version of the bill.
Everybody understand the motion. Representative Hill moves to strike the word primarily on line 11 on Senate Bill 1108. No discussion, no opposition. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1108 to the floor as officially amended with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Hill moves Senate Bill 1108 as amended, conceptually amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Crummel.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative
Taylor. Aye.
Representative
Walker. Aye.
Representative
Wells. Yes.
Representative
Devlin.
Aye.
Representative
Krupp. Aye. Chair
Montgomery.
Aye. We move Senate Bill 1108 to the floor. It's conceptually amended with a due pass recommendation. Do we have a farmer that's willing to carry it?
Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, be prepared for my West Side Bypass.
Farmer Hill.
I'm just kidding.
Farmer Hill. Audience, please bear with us. We're going to bounce around a little bit as we have members present and issues present. So the next item will start at the beginning of the agenda. My gosh, what a surprise. And the item up is a work session on Senate Bill 583A. I'll open the work session on Senate Bill 583A. This is a work session to consider referring this bill to Rules and Elections Public Affairs Committee. It's been requested. As Chair, I'm pleased to make this an option to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Wells. I move Senate Bill A to the rules. Senate Bill 583A to the House Rules and Elections and Public Affairs Committee.
Representative Wells moves Senate Bill 583A to the Rules Committee, House Rules Committee on Elections and Public Affairs.
Is there any discussion for the benefit of the audience? This is a helmet law that we discussed in our committee, and it didn't quite have enough votes to get out. They're probably going to try to do something over there to make it more favorable to a lot of people in removing it. Is there any discussion in the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Walker, and then Devlin.
Mr. Chair, I spent a lot of time on this bill reading through all of the material and came to a very reasoned decision. I'm not about to change my mind now. I'm still a no on this. It's just, you know, we were on the floor last night till 10 o'clock. I'm just not willing to send a bill out that doesn't have the support of the governor and the people of Oregon, and the facts just aren't there to support what they want. These people all say they're going to wear helmets anyway. They just want the freedom to choose. Well, it's not good enough for me to spend an hour and a half of the day on the floor on this issue, and we're there until 10 o'clock at night. I'm still a no.
How do you really feel?
Thank you. Representative Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, with the exception of the 10 o'clock at night, which I don't have a problem with, I concur with Representative Walker. I understand that this motion requires a majority of the committee itself, so it would require 6 votes to refer it out of committee.
Your observation is correct, yes, sir.
Are there any other discussions, Representative Hill?
Mr. Chair, I will not.
No, we don't need to know how half a year ahead if you're going 35 miles an hour.
The rules committee doesn't need to find that out either. We've already discussed it right here, and I think it should just remain here.
Thank you. I think we've had everybody explain in their votes, but we'll now take it. Representative, would you please call the roll?
Representative Devlin.
No.
Representative Hill.
No.
Representative Crutch. Yes. Representative Summers. Aye. Representative Tabor.
No.
Representative Walker.
No.
Representative Wells.
Yes.
Representative
Montgomery.
Aye. That's 5 votes. I'm sorry for our friends. We didn't make it out. We did try. Senate Bill 583 stays right here. Next item on our agenda, we do have a guest that's come over from Deschutes County. That's quite a drive home, so we will try to accommodate them. And I'm sure they'll be very brief for us, so they have a very easy issue, I hope. And that item is Senate Bill 1124, I believe. We'll open the public hearing for Senate Bill 1124. Janet, could you help us with that, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1124A and authorize the county court or county commission to determine whether commissioners of special road districts will be elected rather than appointed. Current statute requires them to be appointed. The bill specifies that if this is a permissive bill, does not require election, but if the county commissioner or county court decides that the road districts should be elected, the county would be required to pay for those elections. Mr. Chair, there was an additional provision, the last section of the bill, that requires special road districts levying permanent rate limits of $20,000 or more to comply with local budget law. That section of the bill has been proposed to be deleted by the -A4 amendment, and I think either one of the witnesses should explain that provision. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have two of our friends with us, the commissioner from Deschutes County and Special District Association. For the benefit of the members, one is for it and one is against it. So if you support local government...
No. Both for it.
We used to be.
Both like it. Okay.
However, we compromised.
I'm prepared to
and it's one page. One page. One page bill because we don't want you to miss another growing
tree. God bless you. Welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
Representative Montgomery, members of the committee. My name is Linda Swearingen. I'm the chair of the Deschutes County Commission, and I'm here to talk about Senate Bill 1124. And as you've heard, this bill will allow county commissioners the option of making special road district board members elected versus appointed. Now, I'm going to tell you what happens currently, because that's where the problem arises. Currently, these road districts get together, and either through a formal or an informal process, they decide who is going to be a member of the club. And then they show up at the county commission and they suggest a name. Now, in Deschutes County, we have 20 special road districts. And I got to tell you, I've been in office now for 2.5 years, and I spend a great deal of time with these special road districts. Now, they're not under the jurisdiction of the county. However, under state statute, we appoint these individuals. But the problem occurs in that these individuals do not take an oath of office. They are not held accountable to budget law, which we have agreed to strike that provision, and I tend to agree with that because most of these districts have fairly small budgets, and to comply with state budget law, they may end up spending more money on that than they would the road, so that defeats the purpose of it. But the real problem occurs when there's a problem on the board, because what tends to happen is individuals have a beef with their local special road district. And they come to the county commission and they say to us, you appointed this individual. And I want you to know they're mismanaging funds, they're taking out illegal loans, and they're holding secret meetings. Well,
I've done enough investigation to find that some of these allegations are true. And because they don't take an oath of office, because they're not held accountable to their constituents, there's a real problem. In fact, the real problem occurs when these types of activities happen, because there's no mechanism for a county commission to come in and remove or recall these individuals. For example, last year we had a particular individual on a three-member special road district board who had come before the county commission. He lied. We found out he and his other two board members had taken out an illegal loan. He misled the commission. And fortunately, we were able to mediate an agreement in regard to this situation. However, this man's name came up again to be reappointed to this special road district. Letter came in from these individuals within the district saying, we'd like to have you reappoint this individual. There was one county commissioner who wanted to reappoint this man because of his previous activity. In fact, all three of us just said we would rather the position sit open. Well, after spending some time investigating the problem and finding that there was not any mechanism to remove or recall these individuals, we sat down and looked at the statute and said there's got to be a better way. In fact, we have one special road district who charges $4 per thousand. Now, that's twice what we charge per thousand in Deschutes County. On a $100,000 home, that's $400 a year. Now, I got to tell you, when those individuals come in and say, we've got problems in our road districts and they're taxing me and there's no mechanism to remove them or recall them for cause, we've got a real problem. So what we've proposed here is that county commissions, if they're willing to pay for their elections, would have the opportunity to require special road districts to actually elect their board members. And I would state that it certainly makes sense. If you have a taxing body, there should be an ability by those folks who are taxed to elect a representative and to have the ability to remove through the recall process these individuals that they feel are unresponsive or performing things that are illegal in nature. So basically that's it. I guess I would just hope that you would consider this. It's not a problem in all areas of the state. However, at least in Deschutes County, we have several road districts who do have a problem, and we would like the ability to at least make them elected officials as opposed to just appointed.
Thank you. I was a county commissioner there some 20 years ago. I know exactly what you're talking about, and we sure didn't have 21. We only had one, and they were a pain in the neck.
Well, Representative Montgomery, I got to tell you, I went through the files, and I noticed that your name is on a couple of these problems, special road districts.
Okay. And then have Representative Loken, we'll change the subject.
Okay.
And then Wells.
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Ms. Swearingen. How do these road districts answer to the commissioners?
No, they don't.
They don't. There's no.
No, the county commissioners have no control over that.
All right, not at all. Follow up. But if they were elected, how do you feel they'd be more accountable, and how would these problems be resolved?
Well,
they still come in and lie and fool everybody.
Well, you know what? I personally think that when you actually go through the election process, you really think a little bit more seriously about your job. You take an oath of office. You agree to uphold the U.S. Constitution and the laws of the state of Oregon, which actually are created for those folks. And I just think, number one, they'll take it more seriously. Number two, it provides a mechanism if, in fact, an individual has committed either a grievance or an illegal activity. Now, unfortunately, as we all know, when they become elected, when you have a neighborhood dispute, it may actually encourage recalls.
Mm-hmm.
However, nobody ever said democracy was efficient. Nobody ever said it was cheap. Nobody ever said it was pretty. But it's the best system we have, and I think it really will clean up a lot of the problems that we have right now.
Thank you. We have one more question from Representative Wells, and we're moving on because we've got a lot of bills ahead of us, and we have Ms. Squires here. Representative Wells?
Yes, thank you. I'm looking at the statutes 371, 305 through 360, which is just amends It talks about county court approving a petition. So I guess my question is, how did you get so many districts out there? Was there that much interest in forming these districts? Because they had to be formed evidently by a petition coming from the people. Sounds to me like you have too many districts.
Well, as I mentioned before, I think Representative Montgomery from here on, lots of us county commissioners said, you know what, Deschutes County has approximately 1,800 miles of roads, of which 900 miles are just dirt roads. And in an effort to take care of those roads and let neighbors actually contribute to a little road district, they ended up being created. And once they're created, they're kind of difficult to get rid of. And we really don't want to get rid of them. I mean, they actually perform a good function. You know, I'm giving you a bad time, Bob, but, you know, the good thing is they do perform a function that we're unable to do due to the lack of funding for roads.
Spatial districts are the best thing Oregon has going for them. That's an editorial comment, because people pay for what they get, and if you don't like it, that's too bad. You can move out.
Yeah.
You have another question?
No, thanks. I'm just wondering how they got into it.
I'm just wondering how we got into this problem, because as you said here,
Ms. Squires, thank you. And then with Mr. Zucker, you'll get your chance. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hasina Squires, representing the Special Districts Association and the errant, some of the errant special road districts. I provided you with a handout of all of the road districts that the Department of Revenue could identify that exist in the state of Oregon, and there seems to be some 121. Some of those happen to be LIDs, and some of them are county assessment road districts, which would be a little different than the statute 371 that we're amending here. This bill started out probably not in the best form on the Senate side, and we were able to compromise, and we do agree that it's really unfortunate that we're having some problems with some of the road districts, and it really is not fair for a county commission to be expected to appoint members of a road district that they don't know, have no authority to control the residents of the road district, therefore have no mechanism to complain. It's just a done deal once the county commission appoints them. We support the permissive nature of the language that allows each county to choose whether or not they want to have the commissioners of a road district elected. I would point out that road districts are formed for purposes of grading, gravel grading, snow removal, particularly in Deschutes County, and do provide services to the residents that the residents vote to tax themselves. The residents of the district have approved the taxation of themselves to form this district, and the county commission also has to approve the formation of the road district. So we may have a lot of special road districts, but part of that is due to the fact that these roads are located within county boundaries and are not being maintained enough, and the residents then of that particular subdivision decide that they would like to tax themselves. Petitions for formation have the tax rate established by the residents of the district. It has to be approved, and the county commission then has to approve the formation of the district. So all these road districts were approved with the commission's blessings in each county. We support the A4 amendments, and we've been very happy to work with Commissioner Sorensen on this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Clark.
I have one quick question.
Yes, sir.
Why doesn't Marion County have any of these districts? See, I've never heard of these things before.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, I represent 800 road districts, 800 special districts, there are vector control districts, all kinds of districts. I'm not sure why Marion County does not have any special road districts. It's a voluntary formation by residents of subdivisions or outlying areas within a county, and so
mm-hmm.
I'm not aware of why none of them formed in Marion County.
Obviously, mm-hmm. In some areas they're not. Thank you both very much. If there's no further questions, Mr. Mel Zucker is with us today. Thank you, Mr. Zucker.
My name is Mel Zucker, and I've been a president and commissioner of a road district since 1985, still am, and as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, these road districts perform a very, very valuable service. We do take an oath of office. It's in Multnomah County, and we do take an oath of office. There is a tax limit by statute, so that I don't know where they're getting the authority to tax high, but it's limited to 0.25% maximum, and most of our districts don't even go anywhere near that. The thing that I worry about is we get in elections, obviously. The they're very small. A lot of these road districts are very small, and in order to do any real improvements on their roads, they really have to just swallow up their money over many years because they just raise a little bit every year. And the election expenses, can be a significant portion of their budget. The auditors, the state does audit and look at their records. But I think maybe...
Just for your information, the bill says the county shall pay for the election, so that's...
Okay, well, then that's... All right, then that'll be on the county. But it still might be an awful lot of things on the ballot. But why don't we just maybe look at it by handling the county commission shall have the right to look into something and supply a remedy. In Multnomah County, there's never been a problem with these districts, and I don't know why there's a problem only in Deschutes County. But let's not make it tough on something we really need.
Thank you. There's no question. Thank you, Mr. Zucker. Are there any other comments, any other questions?
I think in answer to those concerns, if this only permits the county to decide to do that, if there's not a problem, I would doubt they'd want to do it.
It's an option available to the county. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1124A. We will open the work session on Senate Bill 1124A. There are some amendments. Janet, would you explain those to us in a little better detail?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The last section of the S or the A.
You all have these amendments before us, I suppose.
You should have them at your place. There was a requirement that, but districts with budget rate limits of more than $20,000 could come under local budget law. Where they would have to form a budget committee according to statute and be subject to, they're already subject to some audit, but additional audit requirements. And that, those lines are taken out, that whole section is taken out, Section 8 is removed by the amendment.
So the dash amendments remove Section 8. Representative Hill?
Mr. Chair, move the dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 1124A.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Representative Hill, move the dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 1124A. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? We have the dash 4. Yes, Representative Walker.
I'm fine with dash 4 amendments.
Dash 4 amendments are now included in Senate Bill 1124A. Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 1124 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Hill, move Senate Bill 1124A as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Any discussion of the committee?
Well, Mr. Chair, I wish we could require this. I'm of the opinion that any body that taxes people needs to be elected. But they've agreed to come to these terms. So I support this bill. I think it's a good move in the right direction.
Okay, thank you. Comment? Any further discussion? The clerk call the roll.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Aye.
Representative Kummel.
Aye.
Representative Logan.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Aye.
Representative Wells.
Yes.
Representative Montgomery.
Aye.
Senate Bill 1124A is amended. It's passed before the due pass recommendation. Do we have a volunteer carrier?
Sure.
Justin Taylor to carry the bill. Thank you very much. Now we will get back to the regular page of our agenda. We'll open the work session. We'll continue our work session on, let's just start with Senate Bill 86. Open the work session on Senate Bill 86. Senator Tarnow is not here. He was here, but he knows we're moving ahead on it. Janet, can you bring us up to date on Senate Bill 86?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have the Senate Bill 86, the original bill. It was not amended in the Senate Water and Land Use Committee. And it did pass the Senate floor in a vote of 17 to 12. It creates a grant or reservation of access from state highways to abutting property as a legal interest in the real property. We have also a fiscal statement for the original bill from the previous meeting. You have also from the previous meeting attached two amendments, and they replace the original bill and add to the approach road permitting statute authorization for a property owner to make a claim as a contested case proceeding. for relief when the department either closes an approach road or denies a permit for an approach road that already had an access right. The amendments also authorize the director to provide opportunity for mediation when it's determined that the closure or denial may result in a reduction significant reduction in property value. The provisions in the Dash 2 amendment sunset in 2004. I want to enter two letters into the record. One is from Bruce Ebert, who supports the original Senate Bill 86, and another letter at your place from Melanie Mansell. She was an attorney who testified Wednesday on the bill. She wanted to clarify her position on the Dash 2 amendments because she only received them at the meeting. Thank you, Ms. Oh, they're also a new thing at your place today that we did not have Wednesday. It's a fiscal statement on the Dash 2 amendment significantly reduces the fiscal, but there is still a fiscal impact statement. There is still a fiscal impact on the Dash 2 amendment. And I believe that Representative Trumbull has an additional amendment.
Okay. At this stage of the game, things get more confusing than normal, but Representative Trumbull, you have some more amendments to this thing we have before.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I do. When we look at the Dash 2 amendments in the way, and what they have actually done is kind of removed all of the teeth, if you will, out of the original Senate Bill 86. What I have done is I've had Dash 3 amendments brought up, and basically what the Dash 3 amendments do is they reinstate sections 1 and 2 of the bill. And then moves into Section 4, and it puts directed language back in as far as what the Department of Transportation will have to do with regards to permits and deeds. So it's kind of a hybrid. The Dash 3 are kind of a hybrid of the Dash 2 and the original bill.
Thank you, Representative Trumbull of the committee. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 86. Mr. Chair, I'm going to object to the Dash 2 amendments. I would prefer to, I guess I should have moved the Dash 3 amendments instead. I apologize for not doing that. That's my fault.
Well, we have a motion before us, we'll discuss the Dash 2 amendments since it is in a motion. And it's open for discussion. Before I call for a vote, is there any discussion on the Dash 2 amendments? Representative Collins.
Well, quite frankly, what the Dash 2 amendments do is take the teeth out of Senate Bill 86, and quite frankly, if we put the Dash 2s in there, there's no reason to in my estimation, there's no reason to pass the bill. It makes it a mealy-mouth bill that's not going to do anything.
That'd be the first mealy-mouth bill we ever had in this year. Yeah, no offense. Representative Wells.
Mr. Chair, I will support the Dash 2s. There has been some discussion, and I forget who was discussing this, on line 14, dealing with the word significant reduction. It would only be with significant reduction that there could be a movement towards going to mediation, and some of the parties would like to see that removed, where if there is not agreement, then there would be an opportunity for mediation. So you might look at that a little bit. Some people feel that would allow the department to make a significant decision there as to who goes to mediation and who doesn't.
Thank you. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Representative Loken.
I'm looking at Dash 2s and in subsections, too, and I suppose this is part of Dash 3, and trying to quickly compare the two, but one of the amendments, I see it is in the Dash 3, Dash 3s would provide for an opportunity for mediation prior to a final decision. I think that's a good way to go.
Okay, thank you. No further discussion? Okay, we have before us a motion to move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 86. We discussed this in a previous work session, the Dash 2 amendments. We understand that
There is a constitutional problem sometimes with some of these, so use your best judgment as you vote. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Devlin.
Easy for me, Mr. Chairman.
Pardon?
Aye.
Aye, thank you.
Representative Hills.
Aye.
Representative
Chessman, since I vote for.
Aye.
Representative Crummel.
No.
Representative Wilkins.
No.
Representative Taylor.
No.
Representative Wells.
Yes.
Representative Montgomery.
Aye.
That wasn't enough, was it?
Walker.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Remove the dash 3 amendments.
Doesn't matter. We're not done with this.
Well, you get all excited over there. We had 5 votes, so the dash 2 amendments are down. The dash 3 amendments, if you'd like to move them, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 86.
Okay, someone moves the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 86 for the discussion.
I would just say, as I mentioned earlier, that this is more directive language for the Department of Transportation with regards to how they treat the accesses to state roads.
Mm-hmm. You have some comments? Include what was the comment?
Mr. Chair, I just want to be sure that I understand the dash 3 amendments. If they do include the original bill and add the more directive language as well.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, we enforce a motion to move the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 86. Is there a discussion of the committee? That's Representative Hill.
I will not be able to support the dash 3 amendments.
I won't either. Okay. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Devlin.
No.
Representative Hill.
No.
Representative Krupp.
Yes.
Representative Crummel.
Aye.
Representative
Wilkins.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Wells.
No.
Representative Montgomery.
I can believe the way I'm still not going to make it. Thank you. I'll vote aye. Okay, the next 3 amendments to Senate Bill 86 have not passed. We now have before us Senate Bill 86 as originally sent over from the Senate. What's the pleasure of the committee? Hearing none. Yes, Reverend Crowell.
I'll go ahead and move Senate Bill 86. Does it go to the floor or does it go to the Ways and Means?
Well, go to Ways and Means. I will be opposing this motion. That's okay. You're moving Senate Bill 86 to the floor.
Did he make a motion?
I did. Is that your motion?
That's my motion with the DPAS recommendation.
Reverend Crowell moves Senate Bill 86 to the floor with the DPAS recommendation. Representative Hill?
I will not be able to support that motion.
Okay. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Devlin.
No.
Representative Hill.
No.
Representative Krupp.
Aye.
Representative Crummel.
Aye.
Representative Logan.
I will say aye.
Representative Taylor.
No.
Representative Wells.
No.
Representative Montgomery.
Montgomery doesn't matter again. Both aye. We didn't make it. The bill is now back in committee. Full board. Representative Hill, this bill needs to move from committee, and it needs to move now. Representative Hill.
Chair, I'll revive the motion to adopt the dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 86.
Representative Hill moves the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 86. Is there further discussion?
I won't support the motion.
So, clerk, call the roll.
Representative Devlin.
No.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Aye.
Representative Crummel.
No.
Representative Logan.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Wells.
Yes.
Representative Montgomery.
Aye. Dash 2 amendments are on Senate Bill 86. Representative Hill.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 86 is amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Proper?
No, to the floor.
To the floor. For the DPAS recommendation.
Representative Hill moves Senate Bill 86 as amended to the floor of the DPAS recommendation. Is there further discussion from the committee? Will it call a roll?
Representative Devlin.
No.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Truck.
Aye.
Representative Crummel.
No.
Representative Logan.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Wells.
Yes.
Montgomery
votes aye. Senate Bill 86 amended is moved to the floor to do pass. Do I have a carrier?
I'll change, Mr. Chairman. I'll change my vote to aye.
Senator Devlin votes aye. It is now moved to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Representative Hill doesn't need one.
That's bad. I'll carry the thing. Okay. Here we go.
Montgomery carries it. Next item on the list, I hope it's not just contentious, is Senate Bill 773A. We'll open the floor session on Senate Bill 773A. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 773A had offered here on Wednesday. This is a bill that came from the Senate Transportation Committee and passed on the Senate floor 22-7. It would require the Department of Transportation to adopt rules governing the process of approving and issuing permits for systems for approach roads to highways. It specifies a 120-day time limit on decisions in an impartial appeal process. It provides standards that are consistent with local comprehensive plans and transportation system plans for those approvals. You have at your place, or excuse me, I think from the previous meeting, the Dash A9 amendment. You also have a fiscal statement on the bill. This is a process, a rulemaking process that the Department of Transportation is already in the process of doing. The Dash A9 amendments were at the request of the Department of Transportation, and they add the standards, in addition to the comprehensive plan and the transportation system plan, that standards will require the consideration of safety and highway functionality. I think that's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, we have the Dash Edelman's before us here.
A9.
Okay.
But now we're losing our quorum. Otherwise, we're running out to the bathroom, I guess. Okay. What's the pleasure of the committee? I'll move the Dash 9 amendments. Dash 9?
Mm-hmm.
Chair moves the Dash 9 amendments to Senate Bill 773. We've got to keep this committee moving. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? Chair Clerk Colorado.
Aye.
No on the Dash 9.
Aye.
Representative
Taylor.
Aye.
Representative
Wells.
Yes.
Representative Montgomery.
Aye. Colonel has to vote. He's in the room.
Representative Crummel.
We've moved to Dash 9 amendments to Senate Bill 773. Representative Hill.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 773 as amended to the floor. Will there be pass recommendation?
Thank you. Representative Hill moves Senate Bill 773 to the floor to do pass recommendation as amended. Is there any discussion? Will the clerk call a roll?
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Crummel.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Representative Wells.
Yes.
Representative Frost.
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 773 is moved to the floor to pass recommendation. Representative Walker will carry the bill. Next on the list.
You better be here to attend this session.
Absolutely. We'll open the work session on Senate Bill 614A. Janet, could you bring us up to date on that?
773.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 614A requires the Department of Transportation to develop a cost accounting system. A hearing was held on this bill on 14th. This bill did come from the Senate Transportation Committee and Senate vote on the floor of House of 22-3. You have at your place from the committee discussion at the last meeting the Dash A10 amendments. All the Dash A10 amendments do to say that if Senate Bill 108, the Aviation Department bill, becomes law, the aeronautics line on the units that will be covered for their cost accounting system is taken out because they are not, the division will no longer be part of ODOT. Representative Hill has additional amendments, and those have not been received from council, so these are conceptual amendments that add a paragraph on page 3 of the bill.
Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 10 amendment.
Representative Hill moves the dash 10 amendments to Senate Bill 614. Does the committee understand where we are at this?
Well, we haven't gotten all the handout here yet.
Mr. Chair, the dash 10 amendments are the ones the committee already discussed about the ODOT division.
They're just conflict amendments?
Right, there are conflict amendments.
So, line 16, page 1, is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. As I understand, we'll be removing that if 108 passes on the floor today with our two carriers, and I'm sure that we'll have that passed. Mr.
Chair,
could you have Representative Hill please explain his conceptual amendment here?
I will do that.
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
What do we have a motion right now?
We have a motion to move the dash 10 amendments, and the only thing they will do is, this correct, Janet, remove the aeronautics on line 16 if the deciding panel passes today. Hearing no opposition, the dash 10 amendments are adopted. Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, move to suspend the rules for the purpose of making a conceptual amendment to Senate Bill 614.
Thank you. Representative Hill moves to suspend the rules for the opportunity to adopt some amendments. Is there any opposition? Hearing none, Representative Hill.
Mr. Chair, you had your place language, which I worked with Mike Marsh from Department of Transportation on. What this does is it just asks the department to come back and present back to the appropriate committees, the e-board, if they could implement a integrated financial management reporting system. My concept here is that we not throw good money after bad. This will see if we can save money. They've agreed to go do this, and I think in terms of long term, I think it may have value and merit, but they need to go through some process to accomplish that. They wanted November 1st. Said September 1st, and reasonable people, you know, I think September is okay. We can extend back to November if they need additional time to come back with the report. But I think they are accepting it, and it's very positive.
Okay, thank you. Any comments from the committee? Any questions?
Thank you. Representative Hill, what's the ultimate effect of your amendment?
What this does is it goes out and asks the department to look if they could if a integrated financial management system or an enterprise resource planning system would be feasible, would make sense. I contend that it would save money in the long run. Keep in mind the Department of Transportation has their own financial management system, the FEAM system, which is separate and not consistent with the rest of the state. I testified down in Ways and Means Committee yesterday to get the appropriate language, so this is all coordinated with DAF. There's the concept here that I'm trying to stress is that we have a singular financial management system across all agencies. This language only deals with the Department of Transportation. I've been working to get the language appropriate so DAF will make the appropriate decisions so that and work with the Department of Transportation to ensure that we have a consistent financial management system across all agencies. I think long term it will save money, and it will provide the base level information and technologies which will allow the department to come back and respond to the questions and concerns that legislators have, which I think is even more vitally important as we go into term limits where we don't have the time to build personal relationships, long-term relationships with department heads and build levels of trust. So the agencies, we need to give them the tools necessary to be able to succeed for all the requirements, because I think it's consistent with President Loken's bill, and I think it will come back and we'll see whether it saves money. If my suppositions are correct or not, I'm relying on their expertise to come back and help me understand if it's a good plan.
This is not to take the intent of the bill out.
No, it is. It is very consistent with the plan.
Other further questions? We're still on the motion to suspend the rules, I believe, and is there any opposition? Hearing none, the rule was suspended.
Mr. Chair, I move to conceptually amend.
I think President Logan, did you have a question?
I just want to comment on this conceptual amendment. I think this is a really great step in the right direction to coordinate with other agencies, bring them in, phase it in. I think we'd be really helping our state in its defining.
Mr. Chair, I'd move to conduct the amendment Senate Bill 614 with the language as presented before us.
Thank you. Representative Hill moves to conduct the amendments to Senate Bill 614. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, we have a fiscal on this. There was just no fiscal impact, but.
Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, there's a fiscal impact to do the original bill, but it's part of ODOT's budget, so the fiscal statement came back with no fiscal impact. We do not have a fiscal impact for Representative Hill's conceptual amendment, and I don't know the cost of that.
Everybody feel comfortable?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe it's going to be that much. I've chatted with them about this. They think this is a strategy they may implement anyway, that this is just to put everything in coordination to make sure that they've got the legislative support behind this. And I think if everything lines up correctly, it'll...
Okay, and the record will show that the ODOT employees were shaking their head in agreement with Representative Hill. So, okay, thank you very much. Is there any opposition? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Dillon.
Aye. Representative Hill. Aye. Representative Krupp. Aye. Representative Crummell.
Aye.
Representative Wilkins.
Aye.
Representative
Taylor.
Aye.
Representative
Wells. Yes.
Representative Montgomery.
Aye.
We have adopted the conceptual amendments to Senate Bill
614. Representative Hill. Chair moves Senate Bill 614 as amended and conceptually amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Hill moves Senate Bill 614 as a conceptual amendment to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Representative Hill. Wells.
Thank you. I'm going to vote no on this bill. I think we're already doing what this bill is requiring or saying. I think it's a real just a feel-good bill, but the testimony I heard out here is after the audit, so they're already moving ahead. So I really question whether we need this bill at all, so I'm going to vote no.
Thank you. Further comments? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Aye.
Representative Krummel.
Aye.
Representative Wilkin.
Aye.
Representative Taylor?
No.
Representative Wells?
No.
Representative Montgomery?
Aye. Senate Bill 614 has amended, has moved to the floor to do pass recommendation. Legislative President Krupp, thank you very much. Representative Krupp will carry Senate Bill 614. Moving on our agenda, we have Senate Bill. We have four more to go here, and our clock's running on us. And I'm going to go to Senate Bill 1057 and have the public hearing on Senate Bill 1057. Yeah, open public hearing on Senate Bill 1057.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little bit of background. There are two statutes that are at your place and highlighted regarding Senate Bill 1057. These regard the removal of vehicles from the highway. 819-110 is for vehicles that are abandoned or left along the side of a highway or street or road that are not a traffic hazard, and law enforcement officials, city, county, and state law enforcement officials are required to put a sticker on those vehicles and to leave them for a period of 24 hours, giving the person notice and time to come back and remove the car themselves, again, if they're not a hazard. 819-120 provide that those same law enforcement and road authorities officials can immediately tow a vehicle that's a hazard, and the sub 2 of that includes what those hazards would be. They also, the hazard part of the statute also says that the vehicle can be left there for a short period of time, but that short period of time is not defined in the statute. And if the short period of time includes if they have their hood up, if they have flares out, or if they have their flashers on. What Senate Bill 1057 would do would be to indicate that that short period of time could be up to 12 hours. So it would put the up to 12 hours in statute. Again, normally they are left for 24 hours if they're not a hazard. Mr. Chair, the other part of the bill says that, the first section of the bill says that agencies will cooperate in removing vehicles in the subsection, and the very last line of the bill provides that there would be an appeal to a full decision by a law enforcement official. Right now, the hearings officer's decision is final, and there is not an appeal. This did come from the Senate Transportation Committee and did pass the floor, I think, without any opposition.
So we have heard from the state police, and we've heard from the towing people, and they're all in support of this. They have no opposition to it whatsoever. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I do have a letter to pass out. We were not able to stay at the meeting, but a letter to pass out from Kirk Curtis of the state police.
Thank you. We do have one person signed up to testify. Mr. Thurber, sir, I'll mispronounce your name, sir, but please come forward. And as you're coming forward, is there anybody in the committee that has any problem with this bill?
Mr. Chair, I have some questions.
Then we'll go ahead with the testimony. I thought if there was no problem, we could take in the time testifying. But, sir, you better start talking. Welcome, and thank you very much. Well, thank you for being here.
My name is Aaron Thurber. I'm trying to take his trifle.
I thought you were just friendly.
You have some testimony, sir. Thanks for being with us. And if you could be very brief, we'd appreciate it. And then we'll get to some questions.
Be very brief. All right. You have some copies of there.
In fact, it may make things move a little faster if we did get into the questions. Then we can hear your testimony, and that might get right down to the point, and we can move along here. Representative Taylor, did you have some questions?
Yes, I just wanted to state my concerns. I remember in the 91 session former Representative Ray Baum here from LaGrande, we passed a measure that did the opposite to what this does, which isn't to make sure that we kept disabled vehicles off the shoulder of the highway, because there had been experiences where those had presented a real hazard. But as I recall that, it was because they were darkened. And if a person had to pull onto the shoulder for some reason and they couldn't see that car at night, it was a real hazard and had, in fact, caused serious accident, and that was the reason for his bringing that measure forward at that time. Does your proposal differ from that, in that the vehicle would never be left without flares or flashing lights?
Representative Taylor, I believe if you look on the bill,
for the record, if you just say your name.
My name is Aaron Herbert.
Thank you.
And I believe if we will look on the bill, page 1, line 24,
yes.
Hazard lights raised hood of the vehicle or advanced warning with emergency flares or emergency signs is not changed from the original law.
So my question is, does just raising the hood all that would be necessary?
Representative Taylor, we are looking at a question of police discretion. And police discretion, if they consider it a true hazard, a clear and definite threat of safety on the roads to traffic, to emergency vehicles, this will not affect their ability to remove such a vehicle.
Did that answer your question, Mr. Taylor?
No, I'm still not clear. Would it be legal under your measure to just, in the dark of the night, leave your car beside the road with the hood up?
They can leave it there, yes. However, it would have to be visible so that somebody could see the vehicle as it were coming up.
No lights are required. No flares.
Well, according to the original bill, that part is not changed, so yes, they would be required. Flares or something that would make the vehicle visible so as not to, so that somebody could see it as they're coming up on the vehicle. That part of the original law will not be changed.
Representative Hill. I'm sorry, Taylor, were you soon representing Taylor?
Yes, I just wonder where our lawyer is when we need him.
messing with the new Carissa, that's where he is, and that's true.
thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I could support this in terms of if I'm trying to apply this into my district, my area, in terms of, you know, on the sunset, if somebody pulls their car over, the mere presence of vehicles on the side of the road has tended to, you know, slow down the traffic, you know, and you know, for 12 hours, I appreciate in terms of, you know, if your car breaks down and, you know, you're trying to get it fixed to get it out, but in terms of with the impact it has, where it may not be a hazard, but the impact it has on the flow of traffic, I think is, you know, detrimental as well. I just don't understand why we would want to do this.
You hear our questions, sir. Could you respond to those? Or, not, we don't have time to go through your testimony. We all have it before us. And I really apologize, but we're going to move on this bill. And if you can give us a few more words in less than a minute or two, I apologize, but we've got to move.
Okay, if I understand. We're looking at a question of what exactly is a hazard. If a vehicle is causing slow down of traffic, if it is definitely impeding traffic or causing what can be considered clear and present danger, then this bill permits those vehicles to be removed as a hazard. However, if the vehicle is off to the side of the road and it is clearly visible, it is not impeding traffic in any form, and it is not impeding emergency vehicles, if it is clearly marked, and it's just there temporarily because of unfortunate circumstances, then this bill provides a window for the people to get the repairs done and get the help that they need and get it out. But it does not impede police discretion as to what is a hazard or what is not a hazard. And also, I believe if you look on page 2, lines 9 through 11, this leaves plenty of leeway for the Oregon Department of Transportation and other agencies to make sub-rules and to more better clarify what does it mean by impeding traffic or causing a clear and present danger to the public.
Thank you.
Sure.
One question, and that's it. Representative Wells.
Well, on the last line, dealing with the hearing, taking out the finality of that hearing, right now we appeal. It takes 11 years to take someone to the death penalty because we appeal and appeal. Now we're again, and our courts are already closed, which is the hearings officer. So why is that being taken out? Why can't we? This deals with the removal and the custody, the validity of why it was removed, and the custody issues. Why can't we just go with the hearings officer? Why do we have to have the ability to appeal that?
Well, if you look on page 2 of my testimony, part of this is addressed. This bill strengthens the Oregon law and will eliminate possible federal challenges of the bill of attainder. And friends of the bill of attainder include, one, the ability to avoid committing an offense. Some people, the cars break down way out in the middle of nowhere, and there's maybe no shoulder. If they move it off to the side, they're going to be in a ditch. And number two, inappropriate or exorbitant high fines and penalties. And sometimes these costs of towing and storage are so exorbitant that people turn the vehicles over to the towing companies. And number three, the question of judicial review and due process. Under the present law, there is no appeal from the determination of the hearings officer, that's 819.190, subsection 11. And if you look at Exhibit 3 at the bottom of Exhibit 3, the question of due process again addressed in the statement from the Marion County hearing officer that, yes, an attorney may represent legal arguments. However, arguments will not be considered in reaching a decision. So there is a question of judicial review and due process, which will be eliminated by the last two lines of bill.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for being here. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1057. We will go into work session on Senate Bill 1057. Is there any...
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1057 to the floor with the due pass.
Thank you. President Krupp moves Senate Bill 1057 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? President Hill?
I will not be able to support this, but I think it will have a negative impact in the metro area if we allow vehicles and limit the ability to make reasonable decisions as to cars alongside the road. 12 hours is an extremely long period of time, and where I certainly don't want to see people have their cars closed in unfortunate circumstances, but the impact for the rest of the transportation system is too high.
I think we will have a little more discussion. We don't need to explain our votes. You can just vote however you want to. President Krupp, I'm going to vote yes. No, no, I'm going to vote. President Krupp?
I think it's important that people who are on the way to work in the morning, car breaks down. They've got to do their job. They come back, their car's towed. I think that's unfortunate. I think it's unreasonable. I understand the good representative's concerns here. I think it's a good deal to do it.
Thank you. No further discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative
Hill. No.
Representative
Krupp.
Aye.
Representative Crumley.
Aye.
Representative
Hogan.
Aye.
Representative
Taylor.
No.
Representative
Moore. No. Chairman Sherman. Can we vote aye? Senate Bill 1057 did not pass the committee. I'm very sorry, sir. Give it our best shot. We'll go on to the next bill on our agenda, Senate Bill 849. We'll spend very few minutes or moments on that. We're in work session. Janet, could you bring us up to date? Then we will vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 849 specifies that when a utility or service road is created to provide alternative access to property due to access restrictions caused by the Department of Transportation, the right that utility shall remain with the real property, the utility road shall remain with the real property rights. Lines 15 and 16 of the bill say that unlimited use means unlimited use by unlimited users unless the department expressly purchases the right, the access rights to the utility road. The two sections of the bill, one is from the rights from the parcel to the utility road, and sub 3 is the right of the utility road to any state or county road. Again, unlimited use and unlimited users unless the access rights are expressly purchased. Mr. Chair, there is a fiscal impact statement. The amount is not a definite amount, but they don't get around to it until the last line of the bill, and that's, again, if all these pieces did need to be purchased.
Thank you. We have before us Senate Bill 849. Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In just commenting on the fiscal, I find it very interesting, but I move Senate Bill 849 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Collins moves Senate Bill 849 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. As we're discussing from the committee, the fiscal shows the cost of some $16 million. I don't know how they come up with that number. That sounds rather high. So far. Does this the Ways and Means? Has this been the Ways and Means? No, it hasn't.
Mr. I do question that and make me wonder if there's an access problem out there, and if it really is a cost of $16.8 million, are we also guilty of extortion from property owners?
And I'm not trying to beat up on anybody with this, it's just, but it's just a matter of that we have a number of deeds that are out there that that I think this bill is going to address. And there may be a lot more, obviously, if it's $16 million, there may be a lot more deeds than what we think. But I think that this is a good bill, and it's going, it will take care of some issues, and I really do question the validity of the $16.8 million.
What's that bill? I might recommend to the good representative from Wilsonville that he might want this one to go to Ways and Means and get the battle decided there, because I just don't imagine what the court's going to do with a $16 million fiscal that hasn't been through Ways and Means. And, I mean, if they're half wrong, are they three quarters wrong?
I think we do have committee rules that anything of that kind of a fiscal impact, you either need to suspend the rules or get to Ramona down here pretty quick. President Logan?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my question is, can you bring someone forward who could explain that a little more clearly, the fiscal?
Mr. Chair, it says the amount of the impact is indeterminate because it's not clear that the department would go out and do this, purchase all these rights, or even be required to do that, because the access may never be attempted to be used. Saying that if they did have to at one time go purchase those rights, that would be the estimated cost.
But what we can do if the maker of the motion would be okay on it is to call someone down here. We could just kind of put this to one side. We'll come back to it before we leave this room to the floor and vote on it. But we have to do the proper thing and the legal thing. Is it possible to get someone down here? And then we'll carry on with our agenda and then get back to this bill before we move. We have session at 10 o'clock. We will be contacting Ramona right now. Won't we, Brad, and telling her we're going to be late.
Mr. Chair, that would be fine. Does it take a motion to table? Is that what?
No, I think we're just going to motion it right now, and we'll come back to it. That's the motion on the floor. We have a motion on the floor to Senate Bill 849 to pass to the floor. To do a pass recommendation, we're going to await instructions. Is that okay with you?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Do you want someone down
here? We need somebody, whoever came up with $16 million to tell us where it came from.
Mr. Chair, I think the Department of Transportation is the one that came up with the figure.
Well, maybe they could tell us then.
They present the information, but the legislative fiscal is the one who came up with the fiscal statement.
Right.
So if we get the fiscal analyst down here to say whether any other validity.
Mr. Chair, I would just point out the thing that I find interesting is that all of a sudden this fiscal arrives when in fact in the Senate, or at least I don't have it in my folder if there was a fiscal statement, and now all of a sudden it gets over to the House side, and now all of a sudden it's got this.
Well, the chair had nothing to do with the fiscal mysteriously arriving, my friend.
No, I understand that.
Okay, we will have somebody from the fiscal department come down here and explain it to us. I don't care who it is. Please get somebody down here. We will set this aside for a moment and move on our agenda. We have two other bills. We will have public hearings on them, and we'll get a hold of Ramona and keep us here until the call of the House. And obviously you don't need to leave now because all the other committees will be closed. And you won't have a reason to get out and testify. So we will carry on with our agenda. Your items on the agenda are Senate Bill 858 and Senate Bill 757. We won't have public hearings on those. We will start with each, just start at the top of the pile. Senate Bill 858, we have a public hearing on it. I understand there's a lot of people here to testify on it. I can assure you not all of you will be testifying on it. There won't be enough time. I assure you also we're going to allow everybody 3 minutes. That's all you get to testify on it. If that's not enough time, sorry. But we want to have everybody have an opportunity to get on it. Senator, would you explain Senate Bill 858 to us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 858 and the other and growth bill did come from the Senate Transportation Committee. It came through the Senate on an 18-12 vote. The current law authorizes local government to franchise transportation providers within their jurisdictions, either cities or counties, and they can grant exclusive franchises to license, control, and regulate the privately owned transportation providers. The regulation authorizes local governments to regulate entry into the business, to control rate and charge, and to regulate routes. Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 858A would prohibit cities or counties from granting such exclusive franchises, and except in cases where there is a franchise needed related to the Americans with Disabilities Act. That was an amendment added in the Senate. Mr. Chair, the local governments would still be able to restrict and control the safety aspects of the transportation providers, but no longer be able to control rates, routes, or into the business. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and there is a no fiscal impact.
No fiscal impact.
The benefit of the audience, this is too old to testify on this, so we didn't bring picnic lunches, so we'll have to move along.
We'll start at the top of the list and try to switch back and forth for people for and against, so everybody gets a fair shot at it. At the top of the list, you have Richard Sherlock from Radio CAD. If you have some friends with you that can come forward, that's fine. You have Michael Colley and David. I can't pronounce your last name. All three of you are. Okay, thank you.
Welcome, gentlemen. Please, I apologize for moving fast here, and we'll try our best to treat you with all due. We will treat you with all due respect. Thank you for being here.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Richard Sherlock. I have 30 years' experience in this industry. I'm a YoCab's operation manager. We work in the Portland metro area. One of the things that brings us here against this bill is the situation in Seattle, which was created by deregulation about 15 years ago. We don't feel that Portland should be subjected to the same problems they suffered through for 5 to 10 years when they had to re-regulate the cab industry. Market entry control was what they had deregulated there. They had less fare regulations, but price gouging became an immediate problem. Also, control of the type of drivers and the type of problems they had in the industry was almost impossible to police. So as far as the state regulating the cab industry, I think it would be too far away for them to be able to regulate it as on any kind of a basis that would meet the needs of the individual municipalities. And I'm very much in favor of this bill.
My name is David Gweiser. I have over 20 years experience in the taxi industry, primarily as a driver, and primarily in Portland. And I wanted to deal with a competition argument. For some reason, the Senate was led to believe that there's little or no competition in the taxi industry. Much like looking out your window and saying that the earth is flat, there was not very much surveying done. I have a list here of over 300 vans. Various other sedans, town cars, etc., that we compete with. So, in fact, if you total them all up, there are right now in Portland 382 taxis, and there's well over 500 town cars, medical shuttles, and cabs. That doesn't talk about TriMet, rent-a-cars, an incredible amount of competition up there. And what this has done to the business is restructured it so that you have a wide variety of fares, a wide variety of services, and the changes in the rules would reduce the cab business to basically the lowest common denominator, where you had a situation if you called a cab or some other type of ground transportation, you will have no idea what you're getting.
Yeah.
I defer the rest of my time to Mr. Collins.
Thank you very much. Good morning again.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Michael Tolley. I'm also with Radio Cab. Taxi regulations began. The first taxi regulations in the world were 364 years ago when King Charles I concerned about the number for hired vehicles on the street imposed regulations. The concern is just as true today. We have 382 taxi cabs in Portland, which is enough to serve the citizenry. It is enough to serve our business travelers. And every year, the city of Portland that regulates us conducts an in-depth survey to see how many cabs are needed. The number that they decide on, we live with, and it has it's proven to work over the years. 50 years of a system that works should not be thrown out for an economic theory that has been tested in other markets and shown not to work. What may work for the airline industry or the trucking industry does not necessarily work for the cab industry. We feel that this bill takes away local control. And if the city of Portland feels that it needs to regulate taxis, why would the state want to take away that right and take away the safety and the various aspects that the city keeps an eye on? So we would urge the committee to vote against this bill.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your understanding. We appreciate you being here. Next on our list, we have three people who are for this. I will ask them to come forward, since we had three and three, a Michael Wilson, a Dick Jones, and a Bob Kiernan. I hope you know one another. I guess you do, so thank you for coming. Good morning, gentlemen. However you like to proceed, we appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Michael Wilson. I'll try to make this short and to the point. I have about 15 years' experience trying to arrange my life in order to get my wife to the doctor's, because she's disabled. In Portland, we have a lot of gaps in our transportation system. For the disabled, the elderly, low-income workers, there are a lot of areas that do not have adequate service. We can look at the Rivergate section of Portland. The service is virtually minimal, although there are about 4,500 people working out there for about 60 companies along Columbia Boulevard. In the same area, there are a number of companies also. There is no service by TriMet in that area. And both of those areas are adjacent to our lowest income section of our city up there. So it is possible that the people that live in that area could have an opportunity for jobs if they had alternative transit. We do not have that in Portland at the present time. There are a couple of interesting things also dealing with this. Recently, I think it was Monday's newspaper, there was an article that mentioned the fact that the Portland School Board contracts out with cab companies to take special education children to schools, and the cost is increasing every year. I understand the state reimburses the Portland School District for this. It is possible to lower that cost if you had alternative services as well. And I will finalize with this by pointing out I have a friend who works downtown as a housekeeper. And when she has to go to work on the weekends, early in the morning she has to get a cab from Jansen Beach to her job downtown. It costs her $16. That's about 2 hours' work for her. And, of course, in the afternoon she goes back. She has a long wait for a bus at that time. So she spends much of her day and much of her dollars that's in that day that she earns on transportation. And I would urge you all to consider this bill and to please pass it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Jones next. Mr. Kiernan.
Okay, my name is Bob Kiernan of Gresham. I think what we need is a variety of services in places like, you know, the big city like Portland. There's too much reliance on bus routes and light rail routes, yet they're usually tied to mass movements, a lot of people, and cities have become more and more decentralized, so you have a real scattered traffic patterns. Is, almost impossible to imagine the numbers of varieties of trips people will think of from day to day, and I don't think that there's enough of a variety to handle that sort of thing. And this, it's a low-level demand for a lot of these ad hoc routes, and so fixed-route bus probably will not work well. And I think this bill has, I believe, minimum standards that I think are adequate for most people. And that's pretty much it.
Good morning, Chair Montgomery and members of the House Transportation Committee. You have a copy of my testimony in front of you. By way of introducing myself, I'm Dick Jones. I live in the Oak Grove area of unincorporated Clackamas County. I'm involved in a number of activities which all are concerned with transit and transportation, and I'm not going to list them. You have them there, but my comments don't reflect the official position of any of these groups. But if there is the need for improved transit, and it's a common concern with lots of groups out there today, the passage of 858 is most important to residents and businesses in areas like mine outside the central city. Studies show that transit needs are not being met outside the central city. For example, in Clackamas County, the only bus service along the north-south transit corridor, which goes to and from downtown Portland. One positive answer should be private carriers. When and where needs exist, the private sector can fill gaps in TriMet's system. One might question the need for this type of service, and the answer is simple. If a proposed service is not needed, the private carrier will not be in business for long. How relevant the comments I'm making this morning may be can be found by reading the letters to the editor in the Oregonian, page B8 from April 12th, where a lady who served on Metro Citizen Committee said, "We have infrequent and non-existent service on weekends and continue to lose shuttle service on Sunnyside Road." Another dividend of 858 is that profitable businesses will pay taxes, not expecting additional public sector dollars. This legislation, instead of costing taxpayers dollars, will pump dollars into public infrastructure. This certainly is in contrast to many of the requests which come before this body. While governments often say improved transit does not require property taxes, the reality is all Oregonians pay for it indirectly through the loss of services, more congestion, and higher taxes. I would urge you to pass Senate Bill 858. Thank you for your time. And if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
One question.
First of all, I want to welcome Kate Jones from my district, and we have worked together on many things. I would like to ask if you think, I think you mentioned you're speaking quite a bit to the bus service and the need for expanding the bus service. And so is that what you would favor over the taxi service, or how do you think this would tie in? Because I hear in your testimony you're speaking more to expanding that bus service.
Chair Montgomery,
we need in our area.
The answer that I would have to this question, I think you're being misguided right here, that what is being proposed here is a taxi service. I think what we're talking about is deregulating, as far as a number of carriers, a variety of transit situations. And there may be private carriers that would take people back and forth, for example, in your district from the area around Oak Grove to the town center, or take people back and forth to jobs in some specialized area. This is more than just a taxi measure in 858.
We're thinking more like the jitneys that were talked about previously in another testimony.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks for being with us, and I hope you understand the position we're in. We have three more people now that are against it. We have David Baird. It looks like there's four people on a panel, I guess. Keith Levitt, Stan Fowler, and Jim Wadsworth. Are you all together? Thank you. Gentlemen, however you'd like to proceed.
Thank you, Chair Montgomery, members of the committee. My name is Jim Wadsworth. I'm the director of the Portland Bureau of Licenses, and I'm also the chair of the Portland Taxi Cab Board of Review. Taxi transportation is one piece of our overall transportation system. we believe that Senate Bill 858 would have a detrimental impact on our city and would affect the city, the taxi industry, the public, the economically disadvantaged specifically, and elderly on fixed income, persons with disabilities, tourists, and conventioners, not to mention ordinary citizens that need a reliable, convenient, and affordable transportation alternative. Cities that have deregulated the market entry and rates in the taxicab industry have experienced excessive, unmanageable numbers of cabs and cab companies and a wide range of fares, which in the case of Seattle actually increased, a wide range of mileage rates and provider selective service areas and routes going after the easy airport, Amtrak, taxi stand markets, with a corresponding avoidance of those areas and services which are more expensive and time consumptive to both get to and to service. 17 of the 21 cities that deregulated have re-regulated. In those cities that deregulated, citizens' complaints also increased due to the unreliable response to phone requests and a decline in the vehicle condition, driver appearance and training, and again, those non-standard, unfair, and widely variable fares. Citizens' needs vary between municipalities, and local regulation is essential to balancing the public and private needs while assuring safe, reliable, convenient, affordable alternative transportation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you being here. Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, Keith Levitt with the Port of Portland. We are opposed to Senate Bill 858. I brought with me Sam Fowler, who is Manager of Operations at Portland International Airport. We are opposed for several reasons, and they were just stated by the City of Portland. We have actually tested a deregulated environment with town cars, and that's what Mr. Fowler will talk to you about.
Good morning, Chairman, committee members. Once again, my name is Sam Fowler. I'm Senior Operations Manager at the Port of Portland. And as Keith just mentioned, we have operated for a number of years with an unregulated system. Unfortunately, what we've gotten ourselves into is a system that has outgrown the needs of our basic customers. We've gone from approximately three town cars in 1994 to over, I'm sorry, three companies in 1994 to approximately 90 companies today, which equates to almost over, as you heard earlier, someone talk about 500 cars. We have a system that the capacity has just been stretched to its limit. And what we've found that has happened is that we continually get complaints from our customers as well as the drivers. The drivers normally cannot operate their schedules because there's just so many people. We routinely have drivers who will sit in our holding queue for 4 hours or more for one fare. And you can imagine what happens after that person gets to the customer after sitting around for 4 or 5 hours. Unfortunately, we also have some drivers who usurp the system totally and operate out of the terminal and also operate out of the parking garage. The customer is the person who suffers. They're totally bombarded by people soliciting business. We get complaints from customers with being in vehicles that the driver doesn't know where they're going. We've had customers complain of being charged $100 to travel from the airport to downtown Portland. Unfortunately, these are not uncommon circumstances. I've submitted to you a letter from a fairly typical customer who came into Portland one night at about 1 a.m., did not know the city, wanted to go approximately 4 or 5 miles from the airport, ended up downtown, sharing the ride with another person who wanted to go to the bus station, who ended up at the train station. And the only way this person returned to the original position was to go into her luggage, get her cell phone, and be talked back by the person she was going to visit. I'm not here to say that the whole industry is bad. I'm not here to say that the whole industry cheats. What I am here to say is that we've tried the unregulated system, and from our standpoint, the system that the group that works the best at the airport are the taxis. We get less issues, less complaints, and we feel that that's because they're reasonably regulated by the city. So we're here to say that we've seen both systems work, and we would urge this committee to certainly reject this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Dave Barenberg from Legal Oregon Cities. Quickly, there are, I handed out or had the provided to the committee an article from Governing Magazine, December 1998, which talks about the experiences that many other cities have had and what drove a number of cities that had attempted to deregulate the cab industry back to a regulated market. They found that it just didn't work. What the proponents of this measure are portraying as a panacea, as solving a whole myriad of transit issues, is really not even a placebo. It doesn't even let folks feel good, because while trying to cure some general problems that need a real integrated approach in the way we design our transportation system, it causes major disruptions in the existing system. For example, with this bill, if you got into a cab in the city of Portland and wanted to go to a particular neighborhood, a cabbie could say, no, we don't go there. If you are a disabled person with a wheelchair and you called the cab company, they could say, no, we don't have any accommodations in any of our vehicles to serve you. Both things cannot happen now, today. And then fundamentally, and the point I want to close on, is that this is an issue, just going back to local control, that we have governments at the city level, the county level, the ports, that are supposed to balance the needs of the specific constituencies and that they represent and serve. And what this bill is doing is substituting a scheme that has not worked, and most other places it's been tried, for the judgment of locally elected officials to be able to implement a transportation network that meets the needs of the citizens in their area. So with that, Mr. Chair, I conclude and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, David. Thank you all very much, and thanks for your understanding. The next three we'd like to bring up, and these will be three people that we have that are for it: Bob Dinkey, Mel Zucker, and Ron Charles and Joe Tabor. If you all four know one another, come up together. If you don't, come up together anyhow. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for bearing with us, and thank you for understanding our time constraints. We appreciate your understanding, and however you might proceed.
My name is Mel Zucker, and I'd like to briefly explain just exactly what this bill does. It removes the authority of cities, counties, transit agencies to regulate the number of providers, the fares charged, and the routes served. It maintains the regulation of safety, equipment, and insurance requirements. The bill, in quote, any other requirements necessary to assure safe and reliable service by such vehicles. The horror stories different cities have totally deregulated. This is not a total deregulation bill. And what the problem Seattle had, they had because they went too far. We didn't go that extra step to go to total deregulation. If you look at the exhibits I handed out, the first exhibit is a letter to the editor from the then chairman of the board of TriMet, Bill Bogue, in response to an Oregonian editorial which asked for jitneys, for TriMet to loosen up the jitney service, and actually that was misdirected, because it's the state that has to loosen it up. It's really not within TriMet's jurisdiction. But this is Bill Bogue's answer from TriMet. He welcomed the chance to bring competition into the field. The next thing, exhibit, if you look at the 1997 Oregon Public Transportation Plan, and if you look at the underlying things, part of the Oregon Transportation Plan, private jitney-like providers might also enter door-to-door or site-to-site public transportation, strip market, providing a more personalized service than currently available. The next exhibit is the Wall Street Journal calling for letting the van laws, what they call vans, sometimes they call jitneys, sometimes they just call more cabs. The next exhibit is a comparison of safety, and you can see that there is no safety problem, never has been, and they actually are safer, according to the statistics, than the transit agencies. And then that next exhibit is the Special Education Care Fairs article that just appeared in March in the Oregonian, where the care prices are so high they've affected the school system. And we've got to lower those prices, and the best way to do it is to introduce competition. For goodness sake, we've done everything in this country on the basis of competition, and this is one area that has an exemption from the antitrust laws. And so all we're doing is saying, let competition in, let the free market take a shot at solving our problems. DMTs have been going up every single year. We've got to do something. This is putting more transit vehicles on the road. If you're for transit, you've got to be for this. If you're for competition, you've got to be for this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll go next. John Charles, Cascade Policy Institute. Also, a hardcore transit user. I have an annual bus pass from Fremont. I live in unincorporated Clackamas County, and I believe in transit. And the reason I'm supporting this bill, my handout is one that's not on letterhead. It says international experience with private buses and jitneys is that the positive experience, this is not a theoretical construct. This is an empirical fact that everywhere where you get government regulation out of the way, whether it's in this country or elsewhere, what you find is an explosion of entrepreneurial activity, and particularly it's people, minorities and people with limited income, who specifically benefit from competition and choice. The second page simply is a graph showing that the explosion in trip making since 1969 is not in the home to work commute, which is relatively easy to serve. It's in other personal business and shopping. And if you want to provide people alternatives to the private motor vehicle, then you need deregulated competition, deregulated industry to allow niche markets to emerge. The final two simply show that when you create and enforce government cartels, which is what we do in this state, you have people responding to political markets, not financial markets, and therefore you get the highest cost transit. The obsession by the governor and others in this state with fixed rail, the highest cost, the most energy intensive, that is a result of government intervention in the market. So I'll just close by saying that in my experience, when people go into Safeway or Fred Meyer, where there's been an explosion in choice, now over 30,000 products typically, where there used to be maybe 10,000, they don't typically complain about price gouging or too many choices or please protect me from the result of my own decision making. No, they like having lots of choices. And I'm sure that you all, as incumbents, would find it convenient if, in general primary elections, you were shielded from competition. People could say, well, democracy would be a lot more efficient if you just had the incumbents automatically reelected all the time. Yes, competition, you know, does get messy sometimes. But in my view, when people come to you and they want you to create, use government, and administer cartels, be very, very wary. The people who ask you to do that typically have a vested financial interest in being shielded from competition, and when you start doing that, you're going down a long road to a place you don't want to go, and I urge you to pass the bill. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, good morning.
Hi, Joe Tabor. I'm a 10-year resident of Portland. I don't like congestion. I want to get congestion down. It causes pollution problems and just frustrations in general, and I see this bill is really the only way to relieve that, as taxis and fixed rail systems don't. Taxis generally take one passenger, taxis, town cars, whatever. I don't see today's industry really being deregulated by having a limited number of vans and then town cars. To me, a town car is just as effective as a cab. In fact, I've gone back to using cabs from town cars. I frequently go to the airport. I don't necessarily see the taxi cab industry being cut because, again, they're one rider. When a rider needs to get somewhere in a hurry, he can pay the taxi fare. But where I see jitneys improving things, multi-riders, is in situations of rush hour traffic where you can have maybe seven people hopping onto a van, cutting the traffic down by a factor of seven, and the jitneys can take a person directly to their door, pick them up from the house, And jitneys can also augment the bus service by taking people to bus services, to bus stops from their house, and taking them home directly to their doorstep. Also, jitneys will help in public safety. If a bus arrives late at night or in a bad neighborhood, or just in any neighborhood now, a person can take a jitney from the bus to their door and avoid getting mugged, beaten, or raped. So in general, I think this bill is good for public safety. It's good for augmenting public transit, and it's absolutely vital for cutting down Portland's most important problem, which is congestion. And the state is what's holding the lever to keep congestion in Portland by having these laws which restrict the private transportation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver.
Yes, my name is Bob Benke. I live in Beaverton. I'm a transportation consultant. And the handout that I have provided here, I will not duplicate the testimony other people have, but we have a report card that the governor chairs this Oregon Progress Board, came out with a report card. And the first three items on the report card, I guess there are about 80 benchmarks, but three of them had to do with transit. And basically it says that in 1991 or thereabouts, the transit folks in the state got together and said, what is the reasonable expectation that we could have the transit's going to perform by the year 2000? And they said, what we want to do is we want to reduce the amount of traffic congestion in the Portland area by a certain amount. The percentage of Oregonians who commute by, other than a single-occupant car, we want to increase this a certain amount. And we want to reduce the vehicle miles traveled per capita in the state. And the governor's own committee, you know, gave ranks of F, D minus, and F on our performance so far on this. And I'm very grateful that the governor has been as candid about the lack of performance of public transportation in the state of Oregon, because it's very rare that you see anything like this come out. The second page here is a report I recently got from the Arizona Department of Transportation that did an analysis of taxpayer subsidies in transit agencies around the country. And I didn't put all of them down here, but I want to point out in Portland area, it said that if you look at the spending, and I think the year they had was fiscal year 1996, which is the last year the data has been available, it shows that in Portland, the spending, taxpayer spending, represents about 91% of the total cost of TriMet, and the passenger share is about 9%. And this includes not only fixed route, but flexible route and all the other kinds of stuff. And that represents something on the order of 2.5% of all person trips. I mean, by any yardstick, we're losing the battle financially with our public transportation system as it stands right now. And our ridership has been declining. The percentage of people who use transit to get to work has been declining systematically. Well, the federal government is aware of this. And so what they have come out with is a number of policy decisions that say, in low-density areas where most Oregonians and most Americans now like to live, that conventional fixed-route bus and rail services don't make economic sense. And you have to get to more flexible kinds of transportation. And they have developed programs to try and encourage this type of thing. And one of the impediments that we have in the state is, if you look at the final page here, is what is the definition of mass transit? What is the definition of public transit? If you look at the federal definition, it says that the vehicle can be publicly owned or privately owned, and as long as it provides regular service to people, it can be fixed route or it can be flexible route, that constitutes public transportation. However, if you look at the Oregon Transportation Plan, they have a very different definition down on the very bottom of it. And according to the Oregon Transportation Plan, which was developed in 92, it says public transit does not include carpools, it does not include senior van services, and public transit only really includes fixed-route type services. So we have this kind of a conflict, and this bill, I think, which I urge you to support, I am an unabashed public transit advocate. I would like to see the private sector get more actively involved in the thing. I think there's a tremendous opportunity for the state. And what I would like to do is to see this bill passed, because I think it would open the private sector up, a lot of individuals, to provide much better service, not only in urban areas, but in suburban areas and rural areas where our present transit system just isn't working very well.
Thank you, Bob. And we will go back to the other bill. We have five more people to testify. They're all against. We've had a balanced panel so far. We will try to get back to these other people. At this point in time, we better move on to the other bill. I promise to come back to it. We will temporarily set aside Senate Bill 858. I'll reopen the work session on number Senate Bill 849. We have before we get into discussion, a motion to move Senate Bill 849 to the floor. We have the fiscal people here, and if they would like to come forward, fine, or I can, thank you. I appreciate it if you would. Thank you very much, Paul. You're familiar with what we're talking about?
I believe so. For the record, Paul Siebert, Legislative Fiscal Office. I think your question was, should this bill be referred to Ways and Means Committee?
The question was, because of a $16 million revenue impact on it, but I also have a note that was on it over the Senate side, too. So
you're correct, Chair. Chair Montgomery, committee members. The impact you see on the fiscal impact statement would be, in essence, the cost for a preemptive strike for the department to go out and buy up the access rights to all the access roads and utility roads in the state right now. If I could, I'd like to read from the department's impact statement form. After talking about the safety implications of this bill, and they say that in order to maintain current safety conditions on already existing service utility roads, the department would need to purchase access rights. However, Senate Bill 849 does not require such expenditures. So nothing in this bill that requires any expenditures. As far as I can tell, I don't believe the bill needs to go to the Ways and Means Committee. It's purely a permissive bill. It may lead to some increased costs for purchasing some access rights if the department were to build, for example, the Western Bypass, which would require a lot of access roads. They may have to purchase some access rights, but there's nothing in the bill that I see that would require a referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Are there any questions at all? I appreciate your opinion, and that's why we called you here, and I think we hit on to that opinion. Are there any questions? Having none, thanks for taking the time out. We now have before us a motion to move Senate Bill 849 to the floor with a due pass. We have a quorum present. Is there any discussion on Senate Bill 849? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll, and I don't think the people that aren't here are well, they're excused. Shouldn't be.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Krupp.
Aye.
Representative Krummel.
Aye.
Representative Tater.
No.
Representative Wells.
No.
Representative Montgomery.
We have Representative Loken here. We're talking about Senate Bill 849.
Thank you.
And the motion is to move to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Right.
And there is no fiscal impact at this time on the bill.
Okay. I'll hear you.
Representative
Montgomery reluctantly votes yes. How many do you have, Brian? Okay. Goes to the floor to do pass recommendation. I reserve the right to vote no on the floor and probably will. Next bill, we'll go back to House Bill 858. We need a carrier.
Representative Cromwell will carry the bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Senate Bill 858 will reopen the public hearing on there. Thanks for bearing with us. We'll start with, we'll just start at the top. Mr. Dean and Tashom, I can't pronounce the name. They're not here. Okay. We have, there is one. Thank you, sir. We also have John Hamilton. We have three chairs up here, and Harry Driver, if you could join us, if you're still in the audience. Thank you, sir.
He's not in the audience right now, but somebody wants to see if I could find him. Also, Bill Dean. I'm John Hamilton, the taxi cab supervisor for the city of Portland. Do you want me to just go ahead?
Yes, please. Okay. Please do.
The first point I'd like to make is that in the city of Portland, we already have jitneys, and that was brought up as an issue. We have jitneys and shuttles now. The city has taken legislative action at the local level by passing ordinances allowing jitneys to go from door to door to provide information. And I think that's probably what some of the problem is here, is that there's confusion about what local government's already doing. And so Green Cab is a company that recently got a company permit to operate 48 vehicles. And part of the reason for that was that that they justified it was that they would do jitney service, which they are doing. Also, the city, I personally and the bureau manager, Jim Wadsworth, who spoke earlier, are working with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement in the city of Portland to get jitney services in the neighborhood. We are aware and have been aware for some time that this is a need. We're trying to network with the industry and possibly TriMet to work out a deal. An example of where TriMet is doing that now is in Cedar Hill, where Sassy's Cab is doing that service. And Sassy's also has a permit to operate in Portland, although they are an Oregon City company. And so we have made in the city great strides, I think, toward opening up the market and including a diverse array of transportation providers, and rather successfully. And networking with the TriMet, who is the brokerage for the Medicaid program, Office of Medical Assistance Program, the taxpayers have saved about $3 million in the last 4 years, and that's a conservative statement. And because TriMet is the brokerage for that, and the city expanded its transportation provider base by including medical transportation providers who are allowed to work, and they are not taxi cabs per se, but we have made an effort to funnel that service provision into that greatly needed area. And then, and this takes in, by the way, not only Portland, but the entire Tri-County area. So I hope that this will... So I'd like to say one more thing about competition. Every 2 years, city regulations require the city to do a biennial study and also to invite competition in the name of new taxi cab companies or medical transportation companies or whatever. Currently, the city does not regulate its market entry nor rates for shuttles, limousines, luxury town cars, nor for the medical transportation providers. The market forces are at work between the city's program and TriMet's Medicaid program that have driven the price down, and that's where the $3 million cost savings have come in. So I'd like to just close by saying, contrary to some opinions, this is not a cartel situation. The local government leaders are very aware that we need to balance market forces with regulation, and for the last 5 or 6 years anyway, they have worked very hard to implement market forces, and we believe they are working. That's the end of my testimony. With me today are two cab drivers in Portland.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Yeah. He's not a cab driver.
Okay, excuse me. See, now there you go. He's a cab driver. He's a medical transportation driver.
Yeah.
So he corrected me. He's not a cab driver.
So thank you for being here. You must have got here soon.
I drove him.
Thank you for letting me be here.
Wrong again. Not been my morning.
My name is Phil Bean. I'm Bean's Transportation in Portland, Oregon. And as you're all aware, we are one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
Yeah.
And we expect a lot of people to come this summer to our city. There are going to be people that are handicapped. But I have found, being in the program as long as I have, that the people we have working for us in the city of Portland, be it TriMet, be it Bureau of License, whoever, I find that they're doing a fine job. There's been rough times, there's been good times. But I see nothing but in the future good times for everybody. And I feel that this program should be left in the city's hands and given a chance to work on it. All I can see is good things in the future. I want to thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, members of the committee, for the opportunity to address this issue. My name is Harry Driver. I'm a taxi cab driver within the city of Portland for New River City Cab Company. I also happen to drive a wheelchair accessible taxi cab. Because of the rampant proliferation of the transportation industry within the last couple of years, and this affects me very personally, and I'm addressing to you as individual members to consider this. My income has decreased $15,000 to $20,000 per year, and this affects me and my family very personally. If this bill is passed, my income is not only going to be as it is, which is less than what it was, it's going to, my income is going to decrease even farther. I strongly consider the committee to consider that every major metropolitan city that has gone even considered deregulation has had to re-regulate within a very short period of time. And I think that we really need to address the major issue here as to the control of the issue. The city of Portland has thus far done a tremendous job, and I think that we should leave it within the local purview. And I'd like to thank you this time for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it. We had two other names that I did call, and I didn't see whether they were here or not. So they must not be here. So everybody that has signed up has testified. What was your name? Your name, did you sign up? If you didn't. Okay, is his name on here? If you didn't sign up, you've got a 2 minutes. Come on forward.
Look on there. Please tell him where it is.
Okay, I can't see very well.
Under your ears, I'm under Chief County, I'm sure.
Gray hair, too, my friend.
when I came down this morning, I was thinking, Mr. Chairman, because I thought the sun was out and maybe we were over in Deschutes County. My name is John Putman, Mr. Chairman, representative, committee members. Transportation is a very complex issue. I've spent 10 years in the state of Oregon on public transit issues, both on the east side and this side. And today I serve on TriMet's Citizens Advisory Committee on Accessible Transportation, as well as on Metro's Transportation Policy Advisory Committee. What's the major problem? If this was a major issue, the kind of issue that the region really should have down in front of the legislature, it would have come to Metro and TPAC would have dealt with this for a major period of our last year. It's not that big a problem. So I don't understand exactly why we're here. If we look at the planning that's gone into the debate in the region, in our region, the Metro region, on the tolls on 217, a citizens committee was formed. 2 or 3 years of in-depth research has gone on, and they're about to make a recommendation to JPAC on what actually we should do. I would say that if we need to take this broad sweep, this type of corrective measure, then that's the kind of planning and time and energy that we should put into it before we do you pass it out and make it law. It's a knee-jerk reaction. This type of thing needs to be at local control. Local control needs to be there. They may need reasons to regulate and to charge and to have metered cabs, and just to open it up is not the right answer. There are a lot of ADA issues, a lot of issues that constituents should be coming to us on that are not clearly defined and how and where and what way we will handle those. And I'd also like to say that I think that they are a little less than forthcoming, having not told you about their success in achieving a demonstration grant just recently through the FTA in coordination with the Department of Energy, Wilsonville, Smart Cab, and Metro to demonstrate potential jitney service between Wilsonville and Kandy using Palm Pilots. And those are the kinds of demonstration programs that we need to have work themselves out, see what the impact and the value is prior to passing a bill such as SB 858. It's nice to see you again, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, John. Thanks for coming down. You used to be in Clarence County.
I did. And we got our co-generation plan.
Thank you. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Kaz Matoshom. I am from Green Cab. I'm the manager for Green Cab Company. I'm against the bill for 5858. In fact, all the people who testify against this bill explain the problem what we have and the problem what it creates for the future. It is really clearly visible all the river, I mean the tax of the town car service in the city of Portland. So if this bill is passed, really it is not improving the transportation service, but it is the destruction of this service and also for the people. It creates a lot of problems. And it creates a lot of problems for the drivers either. So I don't think this bill is not a good idea at this time.
Thank you very much. Now I think we've completed our list on Senate Bill 858. If there's no one from the audience to testify, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 858. And I don't think we have time to go into the other bill, 757. The floor hasn't called us in yet. We will open this public hearing briefly on 757 to have it explained on the record. We have a long list of people here to testify on this bill. Everybody's against it, but Senator George would like to come and say a few words. He must understand we're under very tight constraints. Would you holler at him, please? Thank you very much. Janet, would you give us a brief explanation of 757?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 757 is the A and gross version that passed the Senate floor. It's passed on a 16-13 vote and came from the Senate Transportation Committee. It would require the Department of Transportation to set up a special account for highway construction fund and place all monies that are made available by the federal government for transportation purposes that may be used for highway construction without endangering receipt of money to be placed in that account. And the expenditures from that account may only be used for financing construction of new highways, and this is on lines 17, 18, and 19 of the bill, construction of new highways, construction of new lanes on existing highways, and the construction of new bridges. Mr. Chair, this bill is a referral to voters, and would be referred at the next general election. There is a fiscal impact statement at your place, and it also was available for the Senate when they voted on the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It mostly covers the election costs.
Yes. Did you have a question? I'm sorry. Governor Hill?
Mr. Chair, I just think it's a terrible waste of money to go and do this to the voters. If we can't figure that out here, can't make some direction down Ways and Means, and you know, where they're solved. And I'm certainly not going to support this. Don't want to waste the time hearing the bill.
Well, I think we owe the senator courtesy to testify on the bill. I'd like to offer him that courtesy if the panel and the committee will bear with me. I also would like to suggest to all of you that if you have one or two spokespersons, we would like to ask you to come forward. It appears that you all are agreeing on this, I don't care who it is. If you'd like to wait till Senator George gets here, that's up to you.
Mr. Chair?
You want me just to kind of pick a name?
Can I have a clarification? You said they're all agreeing on this. Are they all agreeing to disagree?
All against the bill, yes.
Okay.
Everybody's lined up, unless I'm incorrect. Has anybody marked their own box? May I just pick a couple people? Lynn Peterson, Thousand Friends of Oregon. I see the local government here, David Barenberg. David, I know you don't have to get on the hot spot, so I won't call on you. Keith would have been around a while and understand. Chris, could you come forward too? Thank you very much. And is anybody else in the audience offended that I didn't call their name? If you are, come forward. Thank you very much for understanding. Thank you, too, for volunteering.
Chair Montgomery and committee members, my name is Lynn Peterson. I'm a transportation advocate for 1,000 Friends of Oregon. We're a statewide nonprofit, nonpartisan land use, support good land use planning. Last time I think I was up before you, it was in support of the gas tax. Our organization has been supportive of the gas tax increase for maintenance, preservation, and safety projects across the state. We are in dire need of money for projects across the state. However, this is not the way to accomplish that end. For the most part, the transportation system for vehicles is complete. Accessibility to any place in the state by car is at an all-time high since the 1950s. This pot of money is one of the only ways that the state has to meet the transportation system needs of transit riders or those who need transit, completion of safe bicycle and ped systems. The transportation system needs across our state are too diverse to take this pot of money and basically earmark it for one purpose and one purpose only. And I think, as somebody else is going to testify, this is, you can't do a one-size-fits-all type of fix on this bill. Highways are not the only answer. I think that we've covered a lot of that information in other testimony. And transportation demand management, which is a large part of the federal money that comes in, means that we have other ways to deal with congestion in our urban areas, and I'd hate to see that opportunity go away. And I'll just end there. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Montgomery, members of the committee, my name is Chris Hagerbaumer. I'm the Air and Transportation Program Director at the Oregon Environmental Council, and I have extensive testimony that I'll hand over, but just to be very brief, I've spoken to this committee before about the maintenance and preservation needs in this state, and you should understand that this bill would allow some funds that could go to those needs to be diverted to building roads. On the Senate floor, one argument for Senate Bill 757 was that Oregonians are, quote-unquote, satisfied with the conditions of the roads. But when ODOT went around and went to communities and talked about developing the Oregon Highway Plan, the message that they heard loud and clear was that our first priority is maintaining our road system before adding new capacity. And we agree, fiscal responsibility demands that we fix our roads before spending money on new capacity. Second point I'd like to make is that Senate Bill 757 would reduce local control of transportation projects. Local communities should be able to decide what transportation projects are most suitable for their needs. And if a community decides that new capacity is the answer, then they will have the flexibility to use money for that. But if a community decides that instead they want to take that money and either fix roads or use it for transit or for bicycle paths, they won't have that as much ability to do that anymore because they will be denied this flexible funding source. Lastly, I believe that under Senate Bill 757, our air quality would deteriorate because we would be funding new roads at the expense of those transportation solutions that provide options that better manage demand for road space. So more and more Oregonians would be forced to drive, contributing to air quality problems, and possibly even throwing our air quality maintenance areas into noncompliance. So we don't like 757 because it offers a one-size-fits-all approach to Oregon's transportation laws. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your understanding. Thanks for being here. George, thanks for coming. Sorry the short notice, but...
I'm sorry, I think I'm short a couple on the piece we're going to hand out. For the record, State Senator Gary George representing District 2. If you all looked at the bill, there's a couple things that would be in stark contrast to what you just heard, and that is that every project that will go into the construction account will be from the STIP in the order that they are there, chosen by the Transportation Commission. Nothing changes. If on the packet you just had been handed out, you'll turn to the back page. It has there the bubble chart for the expenditures for the coming biennium. And if you'll notice in there, they have $218 million in modernization. And so if you'll notice, all the other numbers would stay exactly the same. What we're talking about here, this $201 million is the additional dollars that are coming back from the federal government. This is like Oregon's big kicker check. We have, in the past, been receiving about 87.5% of the dollars that we send back to the federal government. Thanks to the good work of our congressional delegation, we got up to about 90.5%. Now, according to Assistant Director Jeff from USDOT, we're now over 100%. That's where this $200 million where the biennium will be coming from. So basically, this is our kicker check, and instead of going to purchase some Christmas presents, we're talking about actually doing some construction. You'll notice, depending on which one of the ODOT budgets that you look at, the preliminary budget had $541 million more expenditures in it. The current one that's now about before us has $298 million additional dollars in it. If you look at some of the, I hope this one piece is in there. I didn't get a chance to look at that packet before I got here. But if you'll, many of you have seen the presentation that I've done in which I show the actual amount of money that got out to road construction. And this includes everything that you can imagine, including guardrails and bicycle paths. There's only $361 million. And so if you look at the chart that shows the graph of the total revenue, city, county distribution, amount that's actually going out for total construction, amount that's going for maintenance, you realize these are very small percentages of the total. In fact, if you'll notice over at the right-hand side of that graph, you have $1.3 billion, which is the total of all of those expenditures. So what I'm suggesting to you is we have an opportunity right now to do what the voters have asked for. The first page indicates what the polling looks like. I can show you the polling that was done in Portland in July of last year, indicating that the people wanted to reemphasize road capacity. The polls that were done in Portland indicate something starkly different than what you just heard, and that was the condition of the road they rated very well. But the problem was capacity. This morning, I don't know how many of you listened to the news, but you had them talking about on Portland radio the idea of having tolls on certain roads in order to add new lanes, new capacity. That's exactly what this does. This is why we have these new dollars here. Let's actually go buy something other than bureaucracy. And I think it's a great opportunity. And if you notice, this is only a referral to the people. You're not making the decision whether we're going to do this. We're just sending it out to the people and saying, what do you think we should do with our new $201 million kicker? Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Hill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, can you explain to me why necessary to show this out to the voters and why this should not be taken care of down in the Ways and Means process?
Well, first of all, that's possible that would occur. This bill originally started off with more money in it. Of the $661 million that ODOT has in federal dollars, in a piece that they delivered to me, a letter that was sent to me, are indicating about $564 million, if I remember the number correctly, as correct as already going for roads. But when you actually analyze the numbers down, you don't come up with that actually occurring. It's going for a lot of other things other than roads. What we're talking about here, of course, is specifying that this is going to go for new capacity. Now, you guys passed over to us a bill that indicated that we were going to allow ODOT to credit the $54 million that they're required to spend for new construction, but that actually could be credited towards federal dollars. So in a sense, we're doing the same thing, except we're saying, well, rather than just doing the $54 million, which was originally supposed to be gas tax and weight mile, and then rather than just going over and saying we can use federal dollars to credit the completion of that statutory requirement, but we're going to say let's go ahead and get honest with the numbers, bring the thing up to our new capacity construction of $201 million. You guys look at the graph. If you don't believe there's that much money, I don't know what to tell you. I'm without words.
Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, you know, I don't have a problem with the purpose of the bill. That doesn't bother me.
Right.
What bothers me, and I will not vote for this bill, is the fact that you have this as a referral out to people, and I just feel that is this incredible waste of money, putting an issue that should not be out on the ballot and should be dealt with in the Ways and Means process, and it's completely capable to sit down and get the same end, but this just seems like a mechanism not to have to go and talk about it down in the Ways and Means process, not take the time, we'll just throw it out to the ballot.
I would be really happy to join with Mr. Chairman, Chairman Montgomery, and Representative Hill to join you in going down there to do that. I don't think that's going to occur. This started off initially as a bill just to do this, and then we decided that because of resistance from, you know, some of the anti-highway folks what word we got from the governor's office, the best thing to do then was to refer it to the people. I think these polls show what the people actually think, and I think it's outrageous that we're not yielding to the will of the people when it comes to their transportation dollars. The very fact that our Constitution says that these monies will be used for roads, bridges, and roadside rest areas, tells me that we're out of line, and I would like to have an opportunity for the people to maybe give us a little instruction with just a little bit of the new dollars coming from the federal government. After all, it's their dollars paid with the 18.4 cents federal tax.
Just a brief comment, Mr. Chair. The dollars that are coming are not the constitutionally protected and limited dollars. You're referring to a different pot of money.
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, the dollars I was referring to are the gas tax and the weight mile. And these dollars right here, what I'm saying is that we have an opportunity here. The reason this number was checked, was chosen, because these are brand new dollars that are coming in here. Those dollars, in fact, if you thought about it, from not the statutory requirement or constitutional requirement, but ethical requirement, the people voted when they put it in the Constitution that the taxes that are derived from the use of their vehicles, gas tax fees and that sort of thing, would be used for roads, bridges, and roadside rest areas. I know that technically we're not obligated to do that on the federal dollars, but morally we are, and what we're saying is let's try to do that. This would be a substantial increase in the amount of actual capacity construction going on in the state. And as you notice, that's less than 10% of the net amount left over after cities and counties was taken out of the $2.6
billion. Okay, thank you, Senator.
Okay, thank you very much.
Coming over. We have about 8 or 9 people still on our list. We absolutely don't have the time. 3 members have to get to the floor. I've got little notes from everybody that they have to get out of here. We will close the public hearing now. We may try to open it up at a later date. I'm not making any promises, but I don't want people to feel slighted that they didn't get an opportunity to testify. It's not fair, but we're at that time. I'll see if we can't have a further meeting. There is no promise of any kind, but I'll do some talking. We are adjourned. We're going to the floor. Thank you all for your patience and understanding.